So the Yamaraj, in the form of this young little boy, is continuing to give transcendental knowledge or understanding of the situation that the queen seemed to be so, what we say, illusorily involved in, absorbed in the idea that they have lost their good husband. They see the body as being the person. And therefore, he's giving them enlightenment to explain that actually there is something different than what you're actually understanding. Therefore, there's no need for lamentation, because what you think is your husband is not your husband. It's simply a combination of material energies. That's all. The real person that you have a relationship with, you've never seen actually, exists within the body. And that person, that entity, is still living somewhere. So what is the cause for lamentation? So Yamaraj is carefully giving this instruction so they will understand. This is the mercy of a great soul. Tries to give transcendental knowledge to relieve the sufferings of others. Because suffering is a form of illusion, just like enjoyment is also a form of illusion. Because this material world is simply a combination of, when we say, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. As Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport here, and these combinations are actually make up what is called the separated energies of the Lord. Separated in the sense that they appear to be, but actually they're not. The appearance is simply due to one's limited understanding of the nature of the Absolute in relationship to its energies. So the energies of the Lord are never separated from the Lord, but one sees in that way. Therefore, one's is what we say, trying to find happiness and trying to move away distress. But this idea of happiness and distress is simply illusion. Why? Because it has to do only with what? The body. The soul, being separate from all material energy, is not experiencing any happiness and distress at all. Because it's not in contact with the material energy. But due to its misconception, it thinks it is, or it perceives differently. Just like, I guess the best example is a dream. When one takes rest at night, one may dream. I had some stupid dreams last night, really stupid. I don't know. Must have been something I ate. I don't know. Sometimes dreams are really stupid. And then you realize it's stupid, but sometimes they make sense, right? And you start really identifying the ones that really make sense. But whether they are ridiculous or actually sensible, they're also illusion. Because in that state of existence, what is happening is that the mind is just connecting certain experiences together in a dream state, and coupled with maybe one's desires, these things are, you know, coming to the conscious level, at least on the level of dream state. So this is called dreaming. So no one really lives within the dream world, right? I mean, in practical terms, everyone lives more or less in this, what we say, solid dream world, not the illusionary dream world. So we wake up, and then we have another existence, and that existence is, you know, we start to identify with everything around us and what is relationship to us and what is not. It's like, this is my mother and father, and this is someone else's mother and father. And this is this situation. These are my friends, these are my enemies. This is good and this is not good. And this, as explained by Srila Prabhupada very carefully in one morning walk lecture, this is another expression of the dream. The only difference of this is it's long term, that's all. Whereas the night dreams are just short, they're shorter, thank God. But the long term ones are just another expression of the same illusion. Because the living entity really is not in contact with the material energy. Although, just like the the person in the dream is actually thinking, maybe even experiencing the dream. So in the same way, but when one wakes up, they think, oh, it's just a dream. So they go on with, you know, the day-to-day life. But for the soul, in relationship to its existence in reality, this state is also another form of dream. That's all it is. So we're dreaming, I'm a mother, I'm a father, I'm this, I'm that, I'm just from this country, I have these problems, I have this success in life. Another form of dream, that's all. But we like this dream. The other one, we don't put much account in that other dream. This one seems to be, has some value, this dream. The idea is to take the present dream state in terms of its practical application and use it to get it to wake up. The waking process is the process of awareness of one's relationship with the Lord. That is the only reality. Because Prabhupada actually says, when you wake up from this state of material existence, you'll realize you never left Krishna. It's just like one bad dream, that's all. It's a long one, maybe in perception to what we perceive as short and long. But in terms of eternality, it's not only short, it's almost non-existent. It's so fast, it's a flash. It's not even a flash. A flash would be faster than our existence in the material energy in comparison to eternal time, which cannot be measured anyway. So, therefore, one should use the state of dreaming to simply to wake up. That's all. That's the only purpose of this dream state, is to get out of the dream, not to somehow stay in the dream and try to enjoy the dream, or arrange the props within the dream to somehow or other make the dream a little better. And that's the conditioned soul, simply trying to somehow or other turn a bad dream into a good dream. But when we use the word dream, we have to somehow connect it to the word illusory, or when we say not real, because in the real sense of the term, it isn't. I mean, in the exact sense of the definition, this reality really has no value at all. The only value it is that we can use it to get back to Godhead, that's all. Now, in other words, what does it mean to get back to Godhead? It means to wake up, that's all. Wake up, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chandra Bole, Kota Nidra Jayo Maya Pisachita Kole. That he uses strong words. That, you know, you're sleeping. And you're sleeping not only in a nice, comfortable bed, but you're sleeping on the lap of a wicked witch. And she's sucking your life force out. And she's draining you all of your, what you say, good qualities and energies. So that kind of, you know, sleep state, you don't want to stay there too long, because you might not be able to wake up nicely. So therefore, he warns that just take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is calling. Udina aruna kora na bhaji dvijamani kora amhani jage tattari tattari bhaji lo ro gana gana maja maji ro ro. He's going through the town chanting, stop decorating your dead bodies and come out of your houses. Lord Chaitanya is on procession with his Sankirtan party and he's chanting the holy names of the Lord. Wake up, sleeping souls, and join the Sankirtan party and come to eternal life by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is the song. I remember when I first began Krishna consciousness in America, every morning we sang that song. Do you remember that song? By Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We used to sing it every morning as part of the morning program. Because most of us were usually sleeping. So it was a good song to keep us, you know, in touch with the reality of our life. But this is basically the nature of the material energy. It captures the material energy, the person. And he's suffering and enjoying, but not really. It's all of the dream world. And Prabhupada, in discussing this, he was so adamant to explain that there is no difference between the night dream and the daydream. The devotees were challenging Prabhupada. Well, this dream is a little different. Prabhupada said, what is the difference? You're simply in the illusion of all these different concepts and identities. How can it be any different than the illusions that you take on during the evening? There's no difference. Because as is explained here, the soul has nothing to do with anything material. Not a little bit, but nothing. It's absolutely, what we say, transcendental. But because it's trapped within this covering, it is somehow or other thinks it's something different. Therefore, the soul, you know, expresses it through itself through the mind and body, and has so many, what we say, conceptions of itself, which are all wrong. It's all wrong. So here, it sometimes, Prabhupada goes on, sometimes it seems like that in this state of illusion that we exist in, we're being neglected by the Lord. Sometimes we seem like we're so much alone in the dream. But here, Prabhupada says, one is never neglected by the Lord. He is always alert to all our activities. How is it possible? Because Krishna is Sarvaguya. He's situated within the hearts of all living entities. He's hidden. Guya means hidden or covered. But he's Sarva in the heart. Sarvaguya is one more word. In the hearts of all living entities, hidden there. So he's with us, every iota of our existence. Watching and directing, not just watching, but directing all of our activities, giving us what we say the proper understanding of how we should move in life, ultimately to take shelter of his devotional service. So becoming awakened means to be aware of the presence of the Lord within our own heart. And of course, as that develops, one has awareness of the presence of the Lord within the hearts of everyone also. So, therefore, as Prabhupada concludes the summary of this discussion, he says, therefore, we should simply depend on the Lord, the supremacy of the Lord, and thus revive our intimate relationship. He goes on and emphasizes the same point in the last sentence, we must depend on the authority and control of the Lord. This is the difference between the materialist and one who has clear understanding. One who is in devotional service has exclusive dependence on the mercy of the Lord, not just conditional or when it gets rough dependence. Because if one has just conditional dependence on the Lord when it gets rough, the Lord will make it rough just to remind us that we should be dependent. So smooth sailing in spiritual life means to always being connected with Krishna. Then the path is sweet and fast. If we're always connected with Krishna and always dependent on Krishna, when we forget, that's why we have difficulties in devotional service. Even the difficulties that could come by way of circumstance are not difficulties for one who is always connected to the Lord. And that's explained in the Bhagavad Gita. One who is absorbed in thoughts of the Lord, even in the midst of the most greatest danger, one is not disturbed. So this dependence on the Lord in all situations is the success of devotional life. To always depend on the Lord. Even the ability and proclivities and intelligence we have developed in our life simply is a gift to the Lord, and it's activated by the mercy of the Lord when we take shelter of the Lord more and more. And these abilities and proclivities can reach such, what we say, proportions of greatness the more one depends on the mercy of the Lord. One cannot even see their own abilities. We also gauge our own qualities and characteristics and achievements within the limited range of our own understanding. But that is simply what it is, our own limited understanding. As the more one depends on the Lord, and the one more takes shelter of the Lord, the more the Lord empowers one in so many ways, and takes control of the devotee's life completely. It's almost like the devotee doesn't even do anything. He simply depends on the Lord in all circumstances. And that is actually the success of Krishna consciousness. There was one story I was going to tell. What was it? I forgot. That's because I didn't depend on the Lord. I forgot the story. Anyway, so this intimate, loving relationship between the devotee and the Lord is the, what we say, the essence of one's existence. So always in that mood, a devotee knows. And Prabhupada explains, what is the nature of that dependence? Or how does that dependence become activated? He said, he mentions two things. That he says, always remember the lotus feet of the Lord. He says, if one always remembers the lotus feet of the Lord, in all circumstances, one will never be, what we say, checked in one's progress in devotional service. Nor will one be checked in one's execution of devotional service. Situations, calamities come by way of, sometimes they come by way of just being in the material world. That's just the way it is. Or they come by way of circumstance arranged by the Lord for our purification and for our, what we say, upliftment. But in either case, the success of our accepting these things is simply to remember Krishna in all circumstances. Vishnu Purana is pretty strong in this case. It says that, what is the greatest calamity? What is the greatest misfortune? What is the greatest anomaly? Is to forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead for 1 second, for 1 moment, it says. So forgetfulness of the Lord as compared to all the other calamities that one can, when we say, list, people will come up with, is considered the worst of all calamities. People may not understand that. They think, oh, sometimes when we remember the Lord before fingers, it's good, I remembered Krishna. But we shouldn't forget Krishna. Therefore, purification of the heart and strong determination to always stay in contact with the mercy of the Lord means to help us always. And even when one is in an apparently unconscious state of existence, such as sleep, when one is on that level, one can also remember the Lord even in dreams. It said that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he learned about Junior Haridas Thakur, his apparent discretion when he went to beg rice from one very elderly Mataji, who was a great, great soul. Not only great, she was one of the most intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya. Her name was Mahavi Devi. She was the sister of, what was his name? What's that holy place in Vrindavan where Krishna dances the Rasa dance? I don't know. Huh? That wasn't his name. Yeah, that's it. Thank you very much. Sikhi Mahiti, very good. Sikhi Mahiti was one of the intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya. Mahavi Devi was his sister. So she also had that, what we say, position. Very intimate. Now, she was an elderly lady, as is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So when Junior Haridas was sent by one devotee to get rice from Mahavi Devi, Junior Haridas was a sannyasi. Now, it doesn't give the details, that somehow his consciousness was in the wrong way. When he went to beg rice from her, Shishi. Rana Gokula Nanda Kijai. When he went to beg rice from her, his consciousness was not right. In other words, apparently he deviated. Lord Chaitanya, who is the indwelling super soul in the hearts of all living beings, understood. And wanting to use this example to teach just how one should be strict in the sannyas order, he banished Junior Haridas from his association like that. Junior Haridas was so overwhelmed with that when the devotees heard what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did to Junior Haridas, it says, they gave up thinking of women in dreams. That's the worst, the echo statement. In other words, they consciously gave up that thought by making an endeavor to give up thinking of the opposite sex in the dreams. So if one is powerful enough in their spiritual life, even in the dream state, one can, what we say, make a difference. The dreams don't overwhelm one. That's the power of Krishna consciousness, that one can control the mind and senses even when one is sleeping. The purity of the heart and the practice of devotional service allows one to stay free from the effects of Maya, even in the, what we say, in the unconscious level, where Maya has a very great advantage at that time. So this is the power of devotional service. Therefore, one can think of Krishna, as Prabhupada said, 24 hours a day. And obviously, he didn't say you give up sleep. So this is the power of Krishna consciousness. And Krishna is there. He's always there to help us. So therefore, simply to depend on Krishna in all circumstances really means to be in the best possible, in the proper position. To depend on one's own abilities means that, I remember the story now. It's just like, okay, I mean, the story is somewhat related, but it has a certain point that Karna, the warrior Karna, powerful warrior. Now, Parasuram was also there, the Supreme Personality of Godhead at that time. Now, Parasuram was a powerful fighter. I mean, he was Kshatriya and also had killed all the previous kings from so many generations. Karna came to Parasuram wanting to get military training. Now, Parasuram didn't like Kshatriyas, and Karna was a Kshatriya. So Karna came as a Brahmana. And he said to Parasuram, and he served Parasuram very nicely, he said, I would like to learn the military arts from you. And Karna approached him as a Brahmana. So being a Brahmana, Parasuram said, okay, but I don't like Kshatriyas, not at all. You're a Kshatriya, get out of here. He was very heavy. No, I'm a Brahmin. His parents were like, what was it? When he was put by Kunti in the basket, he floated along the river and he was taken by two people. I think they were Jai or Radhe something was his mother. Anyway, so he learned all the military arts, most of them. And one day he was massaging the body of Parasuram, and Parasuram fell asleep while he was massaging him. Now, the massaging was going on, and then what happened was, one very, how do we say, demoniac insect, it was like a really horrible insect, landed on Karna's leg and started biting. And it was just biting and biting and biting. And Parasuram didn't want to wake up his guru by stopping the massages. So he kept massaging his body. And he tolerated this incredible pain from this insect. The insect was just boring into his body. So much so that blood spurted from his body and landed on Parasuram. And Parasuram woke up. And when he realized the situation, he was shocked. He said, you're a Brahmin and you can somehow tolerate that pain? No Brahmin can tolerate that pain. You obviously are a Kshatriya. That's what he said to him. And so he said, I curse you. When you need the mantras that I have taught you the most, you will forget them. Mantras that would call the weapons he needed to defend himself in the fight against Arjuna. And because Karna was more powerful than Arjuna in terms of skills and fighting. And with all the weapons and training from Parasaram, he was invincible. But because he was cursed, when he needed to call the mantras at the time when he was fighting with Arjuna, he tried to remember, but being cursed, he couldn't remember. The curse was absolute. So, good example is that when one can remember what is required, in other words, when one remembers the Supreme Lord or the instructions of the spiritual master, one is always on the transcendental platform. But forgetfulness puts one into illusion. Therefore, that's why that verse, that one moment's forgetfulness, just like if you forget something for a second, you could say something and do something that could ruin your whole life completely, right? One little slip of the tongue that could say something that caused something, someone a great offense, or say something that have caused you to act in the wrong way. Even that little, that's how constituted this material energy is. It's so dangerous. That's why we say this material world is a very dangerous place. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, no place for a gentleman. No place for a gentle lady. In other words, we don't belong here. It's dangerous, you know. It's just, at any time, Prabhupada said, we're walking through this nice park. He was on a morning walk with in Denver. He says, we're walking through this nice park. Very nice. He said, but any moment, this whole place can be engulfed in fire. This is the nature of the material. Any second. Just like now, all these countries, you know, one after another, they're getting the nuclear weapons, right? And, you know, who are these people that are in, who are getting them? They're not chanting Hare Krishna. They're not like peaceful sadhus that just want to have a little extra curricular activity by having some nuclear weapons around. No, these people are dangerous, and they will use them. And as Prabhupada said, once these weapons are created, they will be used. This is the nature of this material world. Padam padam ya vipadam. It's dangerous at every step. Therefore, to forget Krishna for a second means to put yourself in a very marginal position. That's how dangerous this place is. And because only when we remember Krishna are we completely protected by Krishna. For a devotee, Krishna is always giving protection. But when we forget Krishna, we somehow or other are outside of the full protection of the Lord because we've taken shelter of something else. So remembering Krishna means to be absorbed. If you're absorbed in your service, you're remembering Krishna. If you're chanting the holy names, you're remembering Krishna. If you're reading and absorbed in the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, of Bhagavad Dharma, you're remembering Krishna. And if you're remembering, if you're seeing the deity, that's why we take darshan. What is darshan? It's darshan means to take a photo of that image of the Lord and keep that photo in your mind throughout the day. And then you can just remember, 7 o'clock, I saw Krishna, he looked like this. And then the snapshots there, you can think of Krishna again, or you can remember his lotus feet. Krishna gives his darshan just to allow us to worship him and to remember him in that transcendental form. Because seeing is easier than trying to simply remember. Therefore, when we see what we say with devotion, we remember that image nicely. We can remember Krishna. I remember when we first joined the Hare Krishna movement, devotees would always fall asleep in class. Most of you are awake. I think 100% of you are awake. Maybe 99.9. Anyway. But when I first joined in New Vrindavan, we worked pretty hard. I mean, we worked really hard. And so when it came to Bhagavatam class, there was practically nobody was awake. Really. Sometimes even the speaker would fall asleep while giving the class. I've seen it. Believe me, it's not an exaggeration. So it was rough days in those days. You know, what they call the pioneer days. And so in order to somehow or other keep devotees awake, we made a little game. And the game was someone would have to ask someone else, what did the speaker say in class today? And that would help and stimulate both Krishna Kanta. And if you couldn't say anything about the class, then he would be caught sleeping. Aha, you were sleeping, huh? So everyone really tried to stay awake because someone might ask you, well, what was the class about? And then you were embarrassed because you couldn't answer. Or another feature was, what were the deities wearing today? That was just as popular. So, and then someone said, well, they were wearing, you know, this color, and they were decorated in this way, like this. So this just helped us to remember Krishna and become, what we say, more Krishna conscious, like this. So this is Krishna conscious. To somehow or other, always, in all circumstances, good and bad, apparently good and apparently difficult, always remember Krishna. Because, as they say, when you remember Krishna, inauspiciousness becomes auspicious. And when you forget Krishna, auspicious becomes inauspicious. Okay. So, therefore, Prabhupada says, depending on Krishna means, of course, remembering Krishna. Any questions? Yes.